welcome to the Pawneeville Ranch Podcast. I'm Anna Davis, Pawneeville Ranch Historical Interpreter.
I'm Casey Poor, the intern here at the ranch.
So it is snowing.
It is. It's really, really cold.
A lot outside. I think the last time we recorded a podcast, it was like the coldest day of the year. So I guess it's appropriate. I guess every time we go to record a podcast, it's just the coldest day of the year.
You know, the horses are having fun. The cattle, not so much. The
like
bison.
2 days ago, it was like 70 outside. So.
You know, I was thinking, like, wouldn't it be miserable right now to be a cowgirl out, like, out in the field, just trying to do your work, and all of a sudden it starts snowing, but you still have to get the cows out of the pasture.
I always tell my parents, like, I would be the worst pioneer, and they were like, oh, well, you wouldn't know any different. And I was like, no, I would know.
I mean, you know it's cold. You're
out
there.
I would know that air conditioning was going to be invented very soon, and I would just be complaining the whole time.
You're out there in a skirt, you know. Riding on a horse, trying to get things done, and it's just a little too cold.
It's a little cold. It's a little hot in the summertime. Yeah, you just complain. But it's appropriate that we're talking about that, because today's topic is very famous, in fact, because she coined the term of cowgirl. When we talk about cowgirls, quote-unquote cowgirls, in our museum, we don't actually refer to Wild West show women, which I think kind of surprises a lot of people. When they come into our museum, they ask, well, where are the cowgirls? And technically, that term is not appropriate for women pre this woman's tenure in Wild West show and rodeos, because technically she was the very first one. Was that a fact that you knew before you started working here or knew anything about her?
I didn't realize that she was the first cowgirl. I honestly didn't know where the term cowgirl came from. I never associated it with the Wild West show. But, you know, my background in education, like pre-K through high school, we didn't talk about Wild West shows. So coming here, I really learned a lot. But I knew just from looking at the galleries that cowgirl was never a term that was used. And in the research that we've done on Pawneeville, like, that's never something that he ever termed. So when we started discussing this topic and doing the podcast for this one, I was really surprised to hear that cowgirl was where this comes from.
Well, I guess in a way it's a bit unusual, because we've had the term cowboy for a while. So you would automatically just think, well, that's the counterpart to cowboy is automatically cowgirl. But again, it all has to do with today's topic. So cowgirl. You hear the word and instantly have an image in your mind. So it might be of a modern day barrel racer, you know, in her glitz and glamour, her pearl snap shirt, her fast paced racing. It might be of a woman working on a ranch, breeding cattle, working the same long hours as cowboys. Of course, in our line of history, we instantly think of Wild West shows and performers that did equal stunts of their male counterparts. However, the term cowgirl, as widespread as it is today, was not used to describe these women.
So for the Wild West shows, the what we would call a cowgirl today was actually known by several different things. You have the señoritas or daring Western girls. May Lily was actually known as the champion girl horseback shot of the West. And then her counterpart, Annie Oakley, was Little Miss Sure Shot. But the popular legend really doesn't come about until we start talking about Lucille Mulhall.
Yeah, and Lucille Mulhall is, of course, today's subject. We're going to be using the source Wild Women of the Old West, edited by Glenda Riley and Richard W.E. Tulane, specifically Chapter 6, which is by Candy Moulton. And the numerous newspaper articles that we pulled from state archives throughout the country to describe her life, because she was very well known in her day and age. And if you don't know who Lucille Mulhall is, you're in for a treat. As I was doing research on this, I kept telling Casey about her and...
It's an interesting life story.
She's very interesting. And, of course, her father, Zach, we will talk a great deal about. And you'll come to know a few things about Zach Mulhall as we go along, too. So, the basic things about Lucille Mulhall. Lucille Mulhall, I've seen her middle name as Agatha, but I'm not really sure if that's right, because it was only described once, and it was never sourced. But Lucille Mulhall was born October 21st of 1885 to Zach and Mary Agnes Mulhall in St. Louis, Missouri. Lucille was one of six children born to the marriage, but only her sister Agnes survived to adulthood. Her siblings, Logan, Marmaduke, Mildred, and Madeline, all died in childhood of various illnesses. And I believe of that, Logan was the one who survived the longest. And Logan is the one that we will talk about the most. I believe Logan was around 14 when he passed away. And Agnes is actually quite a bit older than Lucille. So Lucille is very much on the younger end of all of these siblings. Now, before her birth, Zach and Mary Agnes had adopted a young woman named Georgia Smith. And this is kind of an icky fact about this story, but it's told multiple times, so it's important to the story. The Mulhalls were staunch Catholics, or at least Mary Agnes was. And Zach was quite a bit older than Mary Agnes, at least 14, 15 plus years older than Mary Agnes. And Georgia was the mistress.
His adopted child became his mistress.
Was his mistress, yes. And it was kind of unclear as to whether or not she was his mistress before the adoption took place, or if he became, or if she became the mistress after the adoption took place. But whichever happened, her name becomes known in some sources as Georgia Mulhall. And she is adopted by Zach and Mary Agnes. And he also sires two children by her. So this is all historic record. These two children are Charles, who is mostly known as Charlie, who becomes very close to his older sister Lucille. And another daughter named Mildred. And if you're thinking, wait, there's already been a Mildred. Mildred and Madeline were twins. Who died at birth. They were born to Mary Agnes, and Georgia later on has her own daughter who she names Mildred after one of the dead twins.
A little strange.
A little strange. Wasn't unusual to reuse names back then. Pawnee Bill did it for his sons. My family did it. So not unusual back then, a little unusual for us today. But these two children were raised by Mary Agnes, and they believed for most of their life that Georgia was their sister, and they did not find out the truth until Lucille was well into her teens.
I mean, that's a good amount of time to believe that your mom is your sister, but that yeah. wasn't uncommon, like, especially if it was a younger, well-to-do family. You didn't want people knowing the scandal.
Yeah, and it seems from a lot of the reports of Zach Mulhall, I've seen a lot of people describe him as a tyrant. Like, that is a word that is used to describe him in newspapers, in modern retellings of his life. But he basically ruled this family with an iron fist. Like, that is his personality, what he said went, and nobody really crossed him. But as he was raising his family, he was raising it under the idea that Logan, his older son, was going to take over the ranching operation from at some point or another. And then Logan would die at the age of like 13, 14. So then what does he do? He has to go to the next living child, and that would be Lucille.
Well, talking a lot more about that ranch was actually not located in Missouri, which is where she was born. Mm-hmm. They ended up in Oklahoma. And so they make it here about April 22nd, 1889, when Zach would be a part of the land run, which opened up Oklahoma to white settlement. And he ended up claiming about 160 acres just north of Guthrie, Oklahoma. But, I mean, it wasn't honestly like an honest type thing. He would become known as a Sooner because he actually had people stationed in that area. He had scoped it out. He had been a station agent for the Santa Fe Railroad, so he knew how good of an area it was. And so he put people on Beaver Creek, which was just southwest of what would become Alfred, Oklahoma, which was later changed to be Mulhall.
Yep.
And so, you know, he became a Sooner because he already had it claimed before even the territory was open. So he falsely like participated in the land run, knowing he already had that. Mm-hmm. But for all appearances, you know, that's how they ended up in Oklahoma, was through the quote unquote land run.
Yeah. And there is a difference between Sooner and a Boomer. Pawneeville was a Boomer. Zach was a Sooner. Boomer is you're trying to get into the territory from the state lines too soon. And a Sooner was a person who was already in the state claiming land. So There is a difference between the two of them, and Zach was a Sooner, but he used his, I guess, his expertise as a train operator to stake out the best claim that he knew how to. So, again, a tyrant is what they described him as. So shortly after the land run, Lucille and her family officially moved to Oklahoma, and Mary Agnes oversees all of the children's education, and she homeschools them on the homestead. And they are very proud of the fact that all of the Mulhall children are raised on the Mulhall Ranch. Like, that is their family's claim to fame. The family was very staunchly Catholic, and they attended church regularly. And all four surviving Mulhall children and Georgia were put to work on the ranch from a very young age. But none seemed to take to life on the ranch quite like Lucille did. A newspaper of the time stated, quote, "She has the frankness and all the reticent that form the antithetical characteristics of a plains people. Her voice is soft and low. She has a marked southern accent. It is difficult to provoke that laugh. She appears to view the world seriously, another cowboy attribute, and to believe in doing things rather than talking of them." And that's something that we're going to see a lot. Like, she does not have a sense of humor about anything.
I mean, you're working on a ranch, you've got cattle, like, you're in danger quite often.
Yeah.
You need to be able to focus, so it might just be that trait of the plainsmen where there's no joking, there's just getting things done.
But it kind of makes me laugh because, I mean, we think of people in the Wild West show business, which they're very soon about to join, as flashy and personable, and they laugh, and they like people, and...
Like Pawnee Bill and May,
and she is not about that life.
Well, talking a little bit more about the town that they kind of grew up in and around, on June 1890, the town of Alfred actually changed its name to Mulhall, like we talked about, and this goes back to Zach's tyrant personality. He was the town's mayor, the stockyard owner, railroad operator, basically the most important person in town, and then he ended up expanding that 160 original acres up to more than 80,000 acres. That is a lot of land for just him and his family
to try. He owned the town, basically.
To run. Mm-hmm. And he also still worked on the railroad. And so that left Mary Agnes and the children to run the whole ranch, which, you know, was sometimes common, sometimes not. It just depends on, you know, your family dynamic and what's going on. And so of Mary Agnes, when talking about her, this actually comes from Georgia, the child, adopted child slash mistress. Georgia said that she is the best educated, most practical, clever woman in the world. We're all strong and healthy, but mother has more brains than all of us put together. She gets up before daylight and is in her office at dawn. There isn't a detail that escapes her attention, and absolutely nothing goes on that she doesn't know of. It takes pretty clever woman to run 80,000 acres, which... I mean, I would agree. If you're going to run that much, plus you've got a household full of kids, some of which aren't even your own
kids.
Like, you have to be able to know everything. It's one of those mothers have eyes in the back of their heads type situations. And I could see how that would really be good for running an 80,000 acre ranch.
Yeah, and you're going to see with Mary Agnes, like, she's just given children. Like, throughout her life, like here's a grandchild to raise. She's just like, okay. And, yeah, she's still running the ranch and everything, but, yeah, just throughout her life, just children randomly show up, and she's just, okay, I'll take them to raise. And I don't know if that goes back to her Catholic upbringing or whatever, but, yeah, she's just running this ranch, doing what she has to do, raising children, and that is her life. So, from the time that she was very young, Lucille showed a talent for all things ranching. Again, after her brother Logan dies of pneumonia when he's about 14, she becomes her father's right hand, and ranching was her life's ambition, and she did everything from roping and wrangling cattle to training horses, and for all the Mulhall children, working the ranch was expected. Like, you did not get out of ranching, and it was a very welcome chore. A popular story that was told about Lucille's tenacity on the ranch is when she was about 7 years old, Zach told her that whatever yearling calves she could rope and brand on the ranch could be hers. The deal was soon called off when she corralled far more calves than her father thought she would. The estimates say upwards of 2,000 cows.
That's a lot of cows for a seven-year-old.
2,000 cows were branded with her LM brand before Zach realized he'd made a bad deal with his young daughter.
Were these, like, adult calves? Like,
they're yearlings. What are we looking at? Okay. So if you can think of... Well, a yearling's about the same size.
It's still big.
Yeah, it's still an adult cow.
I can't wrestle a cow, no. And I'm 25 years old.
Yeah, and she's seven, and she's out there roping and branding. And they said that she did it in earnest, and he said, whatever you can brand, you can keep. And by the time she hit 2,000, he said, I can't afford this. And so he called off the deal.
Did she get to keep the 200?
She got to keep her 2,000 cows.
That's exciting. 2,000, I'm sorry. You know, working on a ranch, you've got to learn to do things like we talked about. It's not a safe environment all of the times, especially back then when 80,000 acres and you've got to be able to work all of it. There's no telling what's out there, who's out there, what they're needing to do, what they're wanting to do. So Lucille had to learn from an early age. She had to shoot, which was probably one of the most practical skills that you can have on a range. She learned a rope, which became a real big passion of hers. And, you know, again, from Georgia, she would say that Lucille was happiest when she can ride far out in the plains where there's nothing but sky, earth, and cattle. And she prefers to be alone, which she could do on 80,000 acres. You could get on a horse and just go and no one would know where you are. And you're just out there taking care of business.
Lucille and Agnes, who by this point the family called Bossy, and you'll see her referred to as Bossy for the rest of her life. And Charlie were making a name for themselves amongst local ranches as some of the toughest cowpokes around. Now, it was really common at this time for ranches to kind of pit their staff against each other, saying like say if we had like Blue Hawk Peak up here and we're going to go against like the ranch across the city and say our ranchers are better than your ranchers and we're going to test our feats of strength against your feats of strength. Like that's what they're doing. And it's basically like ranch, early ranch rodeos before rodeos are even a thing. And so Zach is sending like his teenage children out there to do this against men who are probably like twice their age.
But and, they're probably still doing it better than
them. Oh, they're still doing it better than them, yeah. And it was common for the ranches, again, to pit them against each other just in feats of prowess. And again, it's an early form of rodeo. Roping, branding, busting, riding, they were all common activities for the young Mulhall children. And in 1899, Zach Mulhall creates what he calls his Congress of Rough Riders and Ropers. So it's an early Wild West show for him. And it features men from his ranch and his children, and he takes them on tour. So Lucille is about 14 years old, and she's competing against men that are twice her age. And she could do it all, but her best act was always steer roping. That's how she made her name.
So let's get back to the term cowgirl and where this term comes from. The most popular story that we have about how she really gets this nickname cowgirl is it's 1900 and she's performing in Oklahoma City and she doesn't realize this, or maybe she does, but Theodore Roosevelt's actually in that crowd and he had been here campaigning to be vice president at the time and he instantly is just taken by this young woman who can do all of this amazing stuff. You know, he himself was a rough rider, a plainsman, you know, he did all these things and he's up here watching this young lady do things that not even all men can do. And so he bestowed that nickname upon her, Cowgirl, and he told Zach, you know, let the world see what she can do. It's simply great. And the Narca News, the Kansas stated, at the reunion of the Rough Riders, where she performed for Teddy Roosevelt, you know, she is a cowgirl. She only weighs 90 pounds, but she can break a bronco, lasso and brand a steer, shoot a coyote 500 yards away. She can play a Chopin, she can quote Browning, constitute Virgil, and make mayonnaise dressing.
Make mayonnaise dressing,
which, you know, women need to know how to cook at the time, right? And by 1901, she was actually called in to perform for President McKinley and Vice President Roosevelt as part of the inaugural celebration. So she's taken to Washington to get to perform at this big nationwide event that is strategically important.
Yeah, and unless I'm incorrect, I believe Zach Mulhall and Theodore Roosevelt had a friendship after they met in 1900, because I believe Teddy actually came to the Mulhall Ranch a few times, because there's a few stories of where he was actually hunting coyotes with Lucille as well. So not only is she, like, roping in front of him, but she's, like, taking him out onto the ranch and they're hunting coyotes like at night and she's like skinning them with him and I'm sitting there like, what is happening? Like this 14-year-old girl and Teddy Roosevelt are just like in the darkness like skinning coyotes.
Would this be during the vice presidency or presidency?
It would have been like probably around the vice presidency, yeah.
So the vice president of the United States of America is here in Oklahoma like skinning coyotes
with a 14-year-old girl.
That is just a story like that. That's Teddy Roosevelt for
that
you.
That is
though.
Teddy Roosevelt that's, for you.
That's just great.
Yeah, and Lucille after that point was just, she was a splash on the national scene as a roper. As with many women in the Wild West show circuit, like, this was a little bit naughty. Like, this was what women did. It was a little bit taboo. Like, you didn't go see women doing these things typically. But to her, like, this is her job. This is her everyday job. This is what she wakes up in the morning and she goes to do. And this is just, this was her ranch life. And in her role with the Mulhole Wild West Show, it's already changed its name from its original name, which wasn't unusual. Wild West shows change their name all the time. She met very famous Western figures. Pawnee Bill, who she had a long-standing friendship with. She met Will Rogers, who we'll talk about later on. She met Geronimo, whom she would perform with in 1904. In fact, Geronimo roped a steer with the Wild West Show in Lawton, Oklahoma, according to the State Democrat newspaper, and he later presented her with a beaded vest that she liked to wear in performances throughout the late 1900s.
That's a pretty unique gift to get.
Yeah, it is. And I actually had to look it up because I thought, isn't this around the time that Geronimo was about to pass away and he would pass away?
So we're getting these nicknames from the newspapers, such as, you know, the female conqueror beef and the lasso in lingerie, which,
making regular headlines.
You know, she's not out there in lingerie. She's in a full,
and she's gaining lots of
nicknames, and a button-up shirt. She's not being scandalous. She's not showing off, and that just kind of, I don't know if that's her father's idea, if that's the newspapers.
I don't know. We talked about this when I was doing the research, but, like, the way that they talk about her, and at this point, 1905, she's close to being, you know, late teens, 20 years old. They're, like, infantilizing her. Like, they refer to her in ways like she's a child. Like, they talk about her, like, full cheeks and her rosy, like, rosy cheeks. And they refer to her weight a lot and her height and
her hairstyle, right?
Her hairstyle, like her blonde hair. And it's just, it. And they actually refer to her in, like, I think at one point, one newspaper, like, calls her, like, an infant. Like, infant-like. And you're like, this is a woman. Like, this is a woman who they are talking about. So
a woman who could put you down and hog-tie you,
you down.
Faster.
Yeah,
than.
And so it's really kind of gross the way that they talk about her in some of these newspapers.
I mean, they weren't all bad, because then we have the cowboy
girl. Which,
I mean, that's the early stages of the cowgirl, but I guess that really refers to, like, she does have cowboy masculine tendencies. She doesn't look like a man. She looks like a girl, a child.
Mm-hmm.
But she's out here doing things that some grown men can't even do that they have to do on the ranch. And then you also have the ranch queen and a ropist.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, we really don't see the term cowgirl coming until after Lucille, even though Teddy Roosevelt calls her a cowgirl. It becomes more and more widely used among the female performers in the Wild West shows and emerging events, rodeo events after Lucille. In 1905, this is also the year that she's making headlines that aren't all good. So,
yeah, this is a really weird fact, especially since it comes out of the state of Oklahoma. All right, we're not a state yet. It's 1905. We don't achieve statehood until November of 1907, so we're still Indian Territory, technically. But I found, this is a really odd item I found as we were doing research for this.
So, in September of that year, 1905, the Mulhall Wild West Show tried to acquire the license to perform in Muskogee. And so, they're trying to get all this done, and then they were banned because the United States Western District Court outlawed roping events, which it seems strange because this is something that we see all the time.
I mean, this is cattle country.
The reason why they do this, and it'll make sense once I explain it, is that it was placed under the same category as prize fighting and bullfighting, which at the time, and still in some places today, is seen as cruel to animals. And if Lucille performs in the state, she could face fines and even imprisonment. And so the city of Muskogee is like, no, we're not going to do this. We'll break our contract with the Wild West Show. And this isn't the last time that Lucille is going to be faced with court stuff over roping a cattle, which is a very normal thing to do on a ranch.
In Lucille's career, a lot of press coverage focuses around her appearance more than her achievements. Everyone agreed that she was an expert cattlewoman, but those often took a backseat to her long blonde hair and her plump full face and her comely red cheeks. She was known for long skirts while performing, her slit skirts while riding, and her trademark white shirt waists, which is just the really popular plain white shirt you saw a lot of Edwardian women wearing. Her cowboy hats, which were usually like gray or brown felt, and often a really large bow. She usually wore a really big bow at the back of her hair. And while she was touring in 1907, a newspaper reporter asked her about her fashion sense, and Lucille answers her questions in her typically straightforward and dry style. So we're going to kind of reenact this. Casey's going to be the newspaper reporter, and I'm going to be Lucille.
Don't you find the very long skirt you wear very cumbersome in riding?
No, sir. Well, I don't believe I ever thought about it. I've always worn long skirts ever since I was old enough to. I've noticed that all the stage girls wear short skirts. I don't believe I ever could.
Why, Miss Mulhall, all these girls in the Wild West wear short skirts. I thought that was what they wore when they were on the ranch.
Well, maybe they do, but I've never seen a real ranch girl wearing short skirts, and I know a great many of them. I know they never do in my part of the country. I'm not trying to give a stage show, you know. I'm simply trying to show how we manage horses, throw the lariat, and handle ropes. I want my exhibition to be real, and short skirts ain't real upon a ranch girl. So she's not going to wear a short skirt.
I don't blame her. I don't even like skirts. I don't want to be out there, like, on a horse in a skirt.
There's also questions asked in this interview about why she rides astride if she insists on wearing long skirts. And again, she has some very firm opinions on it.
Later on in the article, the reporter asks, but you ride astride, Miss Mulhall.
Yes, I have never rode any other way. Of course, we wear divided skirts. We have to. All the girls I know ride astride, as it's the only sensible way for a woman to ride. I think it's the most unnatural thing in the world for a woman to ride sideways. It's so injurious as well as awkward and unsafe. The few girls I have known who ride side saddles become perfect freaks by the way they develop the right side.
I think this is something to stop and talk about, because it's important that riding side saddle, it's not for the woman's benefit. It's not for, you know, anything other than stylistically showing that she is still delicate, that she's still a female, and trying to make what had been considered a very masculine thing to do more feminine, because women were wanting to ride horses. And so the way to do it was, we'll put them in a side saddle, and that way they still look very dainty and pretty, mm-hmm. and, like, they're not riding astride, so there's no risk of injuries to certain things, but we do see that if you're not careful, your back can really get thrown out of whack with this.
Yeah, when I mean, May Lilly only ever rode side saddle, and that was just how she learned. She did not learn until she was, you know, married to Pawnee Bill, so you gotta think she was probably 17, 18, 19 years old when mm-hmm. she learned how to ride a side saddle. I have never seen any evidence that May ever rode a split skirt. Ever. She wouldn't have had to, because if she's not riding astride, she wouldn't have had to wear a split skirt. But if you see pictures of Lucille, it's very obvious that, yes, when she's roping, especially if she is riding astride, she does have a split skirt on. In fact, there's a picture in the book that I referenced at the beginning of this podcast where she's jumping, and you can see when her knees are up, she's got the skirt is split, but she's also got it tucked down into her boot tops. So she's not just letting that split skirt, you know, hang out around the top of her boot. She's actually tucked it down into the top of her boot so you can't see her legs.
I think that's important to talk about the styles, like, of the era, because we have Lucille, who is very much like, my clothes need to be functional.
Yeah.
I'm up here doing these things. And for May Lilly, like, part of the Wild West show
was flash, yeah.
It was taboo for women to do this. Mm-hmm. And so she's still trying to say, I am still a woman. I am still beautiful. Like, I can still do womanly things, but I can also let loose and have some fun, hop on a horse, look amazing doing it, mm-hmm. and shoot targets better than a lot of men can. And I think that's really a big thing to say about the style of the time. I think
it's also a little bit the progress of almost 20 years. May Lilly started her show career 10 years earlier than Lucille. She was also quite a bit older than Lucille by the time she started. You know, Lucille didn't start till 1889. May Lilly started in 1888. May Lilly was married. Mm-hmm. She would have been 18 years old when she started. So by the time Lucille comes along, you know, May's a married woman. She's 20, almost 30 years old by the time she starts. Lucille actually starts, and Lucille is like 14, 15 years old, has grown up on a ranch, doesn't have those same conventions that, you know, May grew up on, because she was raised to run a ranch. You know, that was her life. So
and May was born to
Philadelphia, a white-collar family, you know, a family that, you know, she would have grown up in a place that had some kind of conventions put upon her by the Victorian era. You know, she's born 1869, so she's still well entrenched into the Victorian era of Philadelphia. So, yeah, you're talking about, you know, two different eras, and especially Lucille. Lucille is more into the rodeo side of things than I would say May Lily is. So even though they're still quote-unquote contemporaries of each other, you're seeing more of the advent of rodeo with Lucille than I would say you're seeing with May Lily. So yeah, I would say like Lucille's like, I don't see any sense in anybody riding a side saddle. Like, that does not cut it on the ranch. Whereas, you know, we see, you know, May Lily is running a ranch while she's riding side saddle.
Right. But we also, as far as I know, and I could be completely wrong on this, we never saw May roping cattle.
That is true.
When we see May Lily in the Wild West show, she's shooting.
She's shooting.
Mm-hmm. She's, you know, the rival, the equal, like, on par with Annie Oakley. And so she's not having to be really, I mean, she has to be aware of what her body's doing, but she doesn't have another outside force that she has to fight with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people who are on horseback roping these animals who are gonna get upset when a rope is suddenly around their neck and they're being pulled away. So.
Yeah, that is true, too.
Well, we'll go back. The reporter in this conversation also reserved that she's very serious by nature. I mean, you hear that in the conversation and in the way that she's dressing. She's a very serious person. She's got work to do and she's gonna get it done. She rarely ever smiled. She had a very firmness about her that wasn't found in the other showgirls like we talked about. You know, May Lily was very personable, very outgoing. Even the photos that we see her, she just has this very boisterous, you know, personality. And she loves to take photos and be fun.
Yeah, even when I compare her to, like, a Lillian Smith, Lillian kind of had a seriousness about her. But then she still had that, I would say, like, that personality that she could turn on for the cameras and for interviews. So, yeah, Lucille is kind of just her own beast, I guess, if you will. Like, she is who she is.
And it's that personality and mindset that really does set her apart from all these other Wild West show personalities that are out at the time. We're talking about Will Rogers. He was a really good friend of the Mulhall family, and he had some stuff to say about Lucille Mulhall, and he always said that she wasn't like most cowgirls at the time. She wasn't flashy, she wasn't loud, and she was happiest when she was doing what she did best, and that was roping, which I think is a pretty big thing to say from a man who gets his talent and his fame from being a trick roper, who then moves on into the movies and all of this business.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that this interview that we kind of just reenacted, this interview is also done with Zach Mulhall in the room. And he has something to say about Lucille, which we're going to talk about here in a second, because something has happened during this interview that nobody but Lucille really knows about yet. He says some things, and while she's sitting there, she's just kind of looking at her father, and they said that she just has no expression on her face, like just kind of stone-faced about the whole thing. So, but we'll get to that here in just a second. So by 1907, Lucille and her brother Charlie had kind of branched out from her father's show and created their own brand, which, ding, 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 right there, that upset Zach.
Yeah, especially somebody who wants to control every aspect of their child's life.
Yeah, they had performed, they were now performing indoors on stages, and they called themselves Lucille Mulhall and her Ranch Boys. So instead of being like Zach Miller's Rough Riders or the Mulhall Wild West show, it is now Lucille Mulhall and her Ranch Boys. So she is now, boop, straight
front
forward.
Front and center.
Front and center. They focused their act on horse tricks and stunts with lots of glitz and glamour. And it was during this time that a famed vaudeville singer named Martin Van Bergen joins the show. He was a baritone, I believe, and he was actually really famous at the time. And she finds this freedom on the road that she had never known before, because before, her father is always there. He's always managing her career. He's always on the ranch with her. She's his right-hand, I almost said man, but she's not a man. She's his right-hand woman on the ranch. And this kind of first taste of freedom gives her this opportunity to pursue something she has never known before, and that is a romance.
You know, you meet this nice-looking dude. You're out there. You're hanging out with him. People are going to start talking if you start spending all your time. And so rumors start to appear in newspapers that Lucille and Martin had, you know, quietly under the table tied the knot.
Yeah, they said in the newspaper that when she would ride onto stage on her horse, he would be on stage singing the song My Lucille as the spotlight, like, appeared on her and, like, illuminated her.
I mean, that's a pretty, like, it could be, oh, you know, that's oh, just her theme song.
Stage, yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure that's how Zach probably played it off, was like, oh, it's just her theme song. And, you know, Lucille and Martin are kind of, like, winking at each other out the side. But, yeah. You know, not even Zach could comment on whether or not there had been a marriage, because he just expected that she would come back to the ranch at the end of 1907 because she would get tired of touring. But little did anyone know that actually on September 14th in 1907, Lucille married Martin Van Bergen under the name Lucille Vandeveer. I know that name doesn't sound familiar. Let's talk about it. So Vandeveer is actually the birth name of Zach Mulhall. Zach Mulhall did not become a Mulhall until he was adopted, and it was given to him by his uncle. So she's marrying Van Bergen under her father's actual last name. I'm not sure if that's a spite to Zach, if that's a nod to who she truly is, or why she chose to do that, or maybe if it was just for the purposes of keeping it hush-hush, because Mulhall is a household name at this point, like Pawnee Bill or Buffalo Bill, everybody knows about it. You know, things happen when you get married, and as they're going along, it starts to become very evident that, you know, she's gaining a little bit of weight in a strange way. And it comes out in October 22nd of 1908 that they had been married in a civil ceremony. So, and not only that, but she's pregnant. She's expecting a child.
September 14th, 1907 to October 22nd, 1908. They kept their marriage secret for over that a year. Long. And this is the funny thing to me. They get married in a civil ceremony. She is Catholic.
Right. They come out about that she's Catholic.
And she tells everybody, we're going to get married in a religious ceremony later. And they never do.
Never
happens. They never do. And so it's kind of, it kind of makes me laugh because Zach made her earlier tell all the newspapers that, oh, I go to convent school about 8 months out of a year when I'm not on the road. And she never did. So Zach made her play up her religion a little bit more for the Wild West shows than I guess they actually were. So it's kind of like, how Catholic were they? Like, was Mary Agnes, like, really the only one who observed in the family? You know, it's kind of weird, but yeah, so they get married in a civil ceremony, but they never have the religious ceremony. But yeah, they keep this marriage secret for over a year.
Not only that, but they're also keeping the pregnancy secret. They don't come out about any of this until, you know, it's starting to show when she's up on stage doing these things that she's got a bump because she was a tiny little lady, like 90 pounds. It's not very big. And so that's going to show really quickly. But characteristically for her, she is very tight-lipped about the whole affair. She doesn't go into detail. That's not what's important. What's important is what she can do, her roping in the show, so.
Yeah, so on January 29th, 1909, so this is only about, what, like 4 months after it comes out, 4 or 5 months after it comes out, that she is actually pregnant and they are married, she gives birth to a little boy named William Logan Van Bergen. He was named after Lucille's deceased brother, so her brother Logan, who was close to her age and, again, who had passed away. He's named in various articles through his life as having gone by the name of Logan, so we will call him Logan. His nickname actually also might have been Billy. For the sake of this podcast, though, we will call him Logan. Sadly for the baby, Lucille did not take a role in raising him. She did not seem to be very maternal. Almost immediately after his birth, she goes back on the road. She joins the show circuit, and she actually begins writing for the 101 Ranch. The baby was sent to live with his paternal grandparents in Kansas, and that's where he would remain for almost all of his childhood. He would become the only Mulhall child not to be raised on the Mulhall Ranch in Oklahoma. And this might be for a couple of reasons. Now, there's a few theories about this. A couple of other children had joined Mary Agnes on the Mulhall Ranch. A couple of grandchildren. And then another child that we're actually getting ready to talk about suddenly appears as well. And it could have been at this point that Mary Agnes just goes, I have no more room for children. I have been raising your children. I have been raising my own children. I cannot raise children anymore. And it also could have been that Martin Van Bergen just wanted this child. If Lucille wasn't going to raise it, he might have just wanted this child to be raised in Kansas, where he himself had been raised. So we're not really sure why this baby wasn't given to Mary Agnes like all the others had been, but this was the only Mulhall child to not have been raised on the Mulhall Ranch.
So there's a theory that Logan Van Bergen is not her first child, not Lucille's first child, but actually her second child, and this is going back to this mysterious baby that suddenly appears. In 1906, Mary Agnes, Lucille's mother, and Lucille take an extended vacation together, and shortly thereafter, this random child appears at the ranch, and Mary Agnes takes to raising it, and she names the baby Margaret.
Yeah, so, like, Mary Agnes's, I think, first child was born in 1877. I mean, you're talking, like, almost 40 years of childbearing if this child is actually Mary Agnes's, which isn't out of the realm of possibilities. I mean, right. She could be still having children. We're not saying that Margaret is or is not Lucille's child, but a lot of theories out there do say that this is Lucille's child.
Well, Margaret, you know, she's raised by Mary Agnes, but she actually is a very, very sad story. I was really surprised to hear this. So she's raised on the ranch, and there's some who believe that Lucille, you know, had her out of wedlock with an unknown man. But the historic record states that it's Zach and Mary Agnes who are the parents. So they go and they say, this is our child, whether it's possible or not, you know. But this baby's story gets sadder, so she assumes that these are her parents. But in June of 1908, you know, she's growing 1928. Up. 1928, I'm sorry. So she would have been 22-ish. Yeah. Margaret Mulhall is then going by the last name of Reed. She's found unconscious in a street, and she's rushed to the emergency room or the hospital or whatever, and it's found out that she'd actually attempted suicide by drinking poison, which was a very common method of suicide. And she briefly regains consciousness, but they're never able to get her to tell them why she's done this, and she soon slips back into a coma and dies. And the family, she ends up getting buried in Roselawn Cemetery with the rest of the Mulhall children. So she's still considered a Mulhall child, but very tragic for this family that their kids just aren't living very long. It's either, you know, age, disease, or in this case, suicide that takes the family.
Yeah, it's really odd because she never admits to why she does this, but a lot of friends and family say that she had been depressed before this. Oddly enough, there is another Margaret Mulhall out there, so if you search the newspaper records, you're going to get two different Margaret Mulhalls. This Margaret Mulhall is referred to as Mrs. Reed, even though there's no record of her actually having been married to somebody. So there is a theory that she might have been married off for ranch help to the Reed family of Mulhall, Oklahoma. Which sounds really weird, but that actually happened in my family at one point. So, she could have been helping another family named Reed at that point, but she never tells them why she did it. And she's actually in the hospital for like 5 days before she passes away. So yeah, it's a really kind of odd footnote to the Mulhall family history. Through the early 19-teens, Lucille was busy on the road with her own Wild West show, her father's business ventures, ranching, and other shows. The Wild West show came with constant danger and injury. We know that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're doing really dangerous things. And even as ranching, you do really dangerous things. She suffered from torn ligaments and broken bones. She often performed while injured, so not to disappoint her audiences. I think at one point, like, she severely tore a bunch of ligaments in her arm or her leg. And she had to perform with a plaster cast on. Almost lost the limb doing that. So it was...
That's dedication.
Very dangerous. She performed at well-known rodeos such as the Calgary Stampede, the Pendleton Roundup, and the Cheyenne Frontier Days. Her biggest achievement was winning the title of Champion Lady Steer Roper of the World at the Winnipeg Stampede in 1913. So when we say, like, she's really, really good at roping, like, she is the best. And even Will Rogers would say that. Like, he knew the Mulhalls really well. He had toured with the Mulhalls at one point. He loved Lucille, and she is the best of the best. This also came with controversy, though, because in Chicago, in around this time, in front of a crowd, she actually kills a steer while roping. Kills it and drags it to its death. It's not even like a quick death. Like, this thing suffers in the arena. Now, this is something that happens on ranches. Like, animals die accidentally. Like, it's just a fact of life on a ranch. So she does this, and the precursor to the ASPCA, basically, I can't remember what they called it. It's like the Department of Cruelty to Animals or whatever, brings charges against her, against Zach Mulhall, and against another cowboy from the show. And they get taken to court over it. And they're facing jail time because it traumatized people in the crowd to the point that they wanted to see her in jail. She appears before the judge, and the judge looks at her, and at this point, she's about 100 pounds. She's about 5 foot. And the judge looks at her, and he dismisses all charges because he goes, I don't think that you intended any harm to the bull. I don't believe that you harmed the bull. And so he just immediately dismisses all charges, and she goes on her way. She actually invites him to the show the next evening. Yeah, so she actually runs into this cruelty against animal charges again because she kills a steer in front of a crowd in Chicago. And it's pretty brutal if you read the description in the newspaper article. But again, she didn't intend to. It was just an accident that had happened.
I mean, that's going to be impressioning, watching someone accidentally kill another animal. When it's an accident, whether it's not an accident or nothing, that leaves an impression, but especially in Chicago, these people aren't used to ranching.
That. Yeah, they're not, exactly.
They're not understanding that these things can happen even on a cattle ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can see why it was like, this is astonishing, like this shouldn't have happened. So the fact that she gets off is really impressive to me. Well, Lucille, she has a lot of hardships throughout her life. Like, it seems like she gets going for a good time, and then something happens. And in 1914... Martin Van Bergen actually files for a divorce from Lucille in Kansas. Do we know why? Was it just...
No, he just filed for divorce. And I actually saw one source state that they didn't even know if the divorce was ever finalized or not.
But Lucille, being who Lucille is, didn't seem to let it slow her down for very long. So she ended up starting her own show called the Lucille Mulhall's Roundup, where she toured stock shows around the U.S. until the final show took place in Vernon, Texas on 4th of July weekend in 1917. So she's taken a blow and she goes, I'm going to get right back up on the horse and keep going, because that's just the kind of person she is. And she would actually be the first woman to produce what we know today as a rodeo, but it wasn't the financial difficulties that ended her show. It would actually be the First World War that ended performing days. You know, the nation doesn't have interest in the Wild West shows anymore. There's war brewing in Europe, and there's conflicts and things like that, and other countries reaching out trying to decide what's going to happen with the U.S., and the U.S. is now facing, you know, trade lines are down, money is getting kind of difficult, we're having to focus on war efforts, and so she has to retreat and go back to that ranch and wait out and see what will happen. Nobody knows what's going to happen at this point. The war's just now getting started.
If you know anything about, like, Wild West show history, this actually happens to the Miller Brothers 101 Ranch show as well. They're touring the world, and 1917, that year, is kind of infamous in Wild West show history. When 1917 hits and everybody kind of sees that we are going to head to war, they kind of fold up their show too and head back to Bliss, Oklahoma, to their ranch to kind of wait and see what happens. So nobody really knows what's going to happen. They just kind of have to wait. And so everybody just kind of closes their operations down and they just go back home for a while. So,
I mean, they've been seeing this war drag on for Europe for years.
Yeah, for Europe, 1914 to 1917. Yeah.
And then the U.S. gets involved, mm-hmm. and there's no guarantee that the U.S. getting involved is going to do anything.
Yeah.
Like, it could help or hurt the tide, and so best just to sit and wait it out, and that's just,
and if you're
what
asking
happens.
Well, what about Pawneeville? He wasn't touring then.
these Wild West show people are going, okay, there are more important
things
to focus on than me being up here on this stage, which I think, you know, speaks to their understanding as business people as you know, people of their country. Like, the war effort is more important
it's
to us
better
right
if
now.
We go home and just wait it out,
right?
So, on April 14th of 1919, Lucille marries for a second time to a man named Tom Burnett. Tom Burnett was a Fort Worth multimillionaire. He was the son of another Fort Worth multimillionaire, so he comes from Fort Worth money. He dabbled in oil, cattle, and land, and Burnett had known the Mulhall family through Zach Mulhall for years. Zach, in trying to keep his whole business afloat, because you can imagine 80,000 acre ranch is probably really expensive, had been mortgaging pieces of the property, trying to keep money flow going. So he had loaned Zach a lot of money to help clear off all the mortgages. So when Lucille and Tom Burnett divorce in 1922, it creates a really messy legal situation. How do you divorce free and clear when your husband technically owns your family's ranch?
Right. And I don't think, you know, the whole what's mine is mine going into a marriage exists at this point. Like, everything is shared because you don't have those, I forget what they're called, but where you can sign saying that, like, if we divorce, I keep my stuff and all of that. I forget that.
Yeah. Term. And you have to think, like, in this divorce, she is entitled to a lot. She is entitled to a lot of money. She's entitled to a lot of land. I think there is actually, if you read newspapers from this time period, 1919, you can actually see her divorce settlement start to be scaled back. Like, it starts out where she's, like, given, like, $500,000 and a lot of real estate in Texas and real estate in Oklahoma. And then it kind of gets dwindled back to, like, $20,000 and then a little bit less and then a little bit less. And so what she actually ends up with is deeds to land in Logan County, which included what was left of the Mulhall Ranch. So basically she just ends up with that darned Mulhall Ranch.
They
love their ranch, but that's all she ends up with is the Mulhall Ranch. It was now in her name. So Zach had mortgaged it off. Tom Burnett, his son-in-law, had helped him to clear the debt. Ex-son-in-law now is going through divorce court with Lucille, and Lucille says, this is all I want, and that's what Tom gives her, and it's now in her name. So she now owns the Mulhall Ranch.
Which was probably a little knife in the side of Zach, because you know, he wants to be Iron Fist. This is my ranch, it's in fact Lucille's. And Lucille would never fully do her own Wild West show again. In fact, she would just perform when she wanted to with other shows, and Charlie Mulhall would go off to Hollywood to perform with cowboys that turned movie stars like Tom Mix and Will Rogers. Lucille starts to focus her efforts and her time more and more on the ranch, especially in her later years after the death of her sister Bossie from pneumonia in 1916. After Bossie's husband, you know, a local dentist, also dies, their son was sent to be raised again by Mary Agnes. And by this point, Georgia Smith Mulhall and Mildred Mulhall had left to live in Florida. So, you know, Georgia and Mildred aren't there to help take care of things, but they're also not there to, you know, be a part of the family and have all those meals. And so this means that the Mulhalls, with the ranch that they're living in, they're having to sell it off because they don't have the people, they don't have the funds to keep doing this. So this ranch is dwindling.
Yeah, and 1931 is kind of a turning point for the Mulhall family. And it's because of, it's in this year that a series of deaths just kind of rock them all. Mary Agnes dies on January 30th from a long illness at the age of 71. And then September 18th, 1931, Zach dies on the ranch at the age of 83.
From a broken heart.
From a broken heart is what they say. The most constant present in Lucille's life is now gone, for better or for worse.
The man who controlled everything isn't there to control her, but he's also not there to help control. And most likely,
you know, it's her father. She probably did love him quite a bit. So, you know, he's gone. And also, you have to think, 1931, the United States is in the middle of the Great Depression. So the Mulhall Ranch has been shrunk down to a fraction of the 80,000 acres it had once been. And Lucille is just now in charge of it all. She has no one else to talk to about ranch operations. Charlie's gone. Charlie helped with what he could from California. He tried to help produce rodeos that Lucille would appear in throughout the 1930s. But her priority was, we have to keep this ranch afloat. I'm not going to lose this ranch.
It's the family ranch.
It's the family ranch, yeah. And so there's this ranch that she had been raised on, that her dad taught her how to run. Like, this is top priority. We're not going to lose this ranch.
So in order to do that, Lucille starts to rent off parcels of the land of farmers. And Charlie actually does end up moving back to Oklahoma to marry for a second time. That's apparently a theme with these Mulhall children who survived to adulthood, is getting married twice. The remaining of the Mulhall children start to raise, you know, hogs, dairy cows, and produce and sell and bring in money what they can. But again, this is the 1930s. This is the Depression.
So I'm sure there was struggle there, just people not having the funding to be able to buy the products that they're selling. But without the support of her siblings, and especially her father, Lucille is just found that she's struggling and she's stressed, and the coping mechanism that she turns to ends up being alcohol. And throughout the 1930s, you know, she's appearing in various parades honoring the 89ers, trying to, you know, still be a presence and maybe get some money. She ends up appearing with Pawnee Bill and communities around Oklahoma. And her last appearance before she would retire and go back to just ranch life would be in September of 1940 in the Ponca City at the Cherokee Strip Parade.
Yeah, it's said at that last appearance, she didn't even ride horseback. She was in a car, just sitting in a car, and she was just waving to the crowd. Before that, she had always rode horseback. And the pictures that we have of her with Pawnee Bill, she is on horseback. And she's dressed in her slit skirt and with her little vest and her shirt waist. So she would always dress how she would dress in the Wild West Show Arena when she rode with Pawnee Bill. But yeah, especially like through 30s into 1940, the newspapers just said that she was coping with an illness. We know that she was struggling with alcohol. She was struggling with alcoholism throughout this time, which was not uncommon for this time period. I mean, right. You think about, especially like Buffalo Bill, people like that, like this was just a common thing that people struggled with. So I cannot blame her at all, you know, for putting up with this much stress in her life that she turned to something to kind of help her through this. So on December 22nd, 1940, Lucille Mulhall's life was cut tragically short. According to the Collinsville News, Lucille was riding in a car being driven by Jean Breezley, along with Charlie, her sister-in-law Esther, and a young relative named Harry. Just outside of Mulhall, as they were approaching the ranch, Jean hit a truck being driven by Jack McCarney head-on. Lucille and Jean were killed instantly. No one else was injured.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it said that Charlie, Esther, and Harry suffered maybe, like, some bumps and bruises. Charlie, probably the most severe out of all of them, maybe had, like, a bruised sternum or something like that. And they were in the hospital for, like, a night and then released. The driver of the truck was not injured at all.
So. Which is interesting, because Lucille was probably in the front seat riding passenger shotgun.
Passenger seat.
And the fact that she and this other man are killed in a... Yeah. What I would assume is a head-on collision?
They sideswiped is what it said. Yeah, and I don't know what they consider a sideswipe in 1940. I don't know if it was like a T-bone or, you know, I'm not sure exactly the nature of the car crash. But, yeah, it said that it sideswiped and it killed the two people in the front seat, basically. And everybody else in the back survived. So, and Lucy was only 55 when she died. So
she's not old.
She's very young. Yeah, very, very young. And, sadly, this took place on the ranch. She died on her ranch.
Well, at least she died in a place that she loved.
Yeah, appropriately enough, she died on the Mulhall Ranch. She was given last rites with the rest of her family on the ranch that she loved so much under the direction of Reverend John Abernathy. Interestingly enough, he was a Methodist minister from Guthrie. She did not have a Catholic ceremony. She had a Methodist minister. And John Abernathy was actually a very good friend of hers. So she had a Methodist minister actually conduct her funeral ceremony. She was survived by her son, Logan, her brother, Charlie, and her sister, Mildred. It was raining, they said, that day. The field was a muddy pit. It was in the middle of a wheat field. You had to walk through a wheat field to get to where the family was buried. And the funeral was attended by dozens of people, and she was buried on December 27th of 1940.
I mean, that's a tragic ending to what was a fantastic life, a tragically short ending.
Very short,
you know, Pawnee Bill lived into his 80s.
Yeah, 80, almost 82 when he died, yeah.
So, it's just surprising, and I mean, it wasn't due to the alcoholism, mm-hmm. It wasn't due to any injuries that she had sustained during a Wild
just
West show.
Yeah.
Just a head-on collision, just one of those freak accidents. So a historical retrospective on the life of Lucille Mulhall appeared in the Collinsville newspaper on March 6, 1941. And in it, the reporter bemused the fact that at the time of her death, the world had lost three Western icons in short succession. They were Tom Mix, who died in a car accident, Lucille Mulhall, who died in a car accident, and Will Rogers, who died in a plane crash. And at her funeral, as this article states, an old cowboy says, cowgirls and cowboys might live longer if they stuck to their horses, which that's...
Yikes.
Kind of rough. Like, I mean, you can
die on horseback.
Die on horseback.
Yeah. This isn't, like, anything. I mean, planes, I guess, were a little bit experimental, but even not really at the time.
Well, and to me, that quote, the only one who was actually in control of their, quote-unquote, vehicle at that time was Tom Mix.
Yeah, so Lucille...
Will Rogers was being flown by Wally Post, Lucille was being driven by someone else, and Tom Mix was driving his own car.
But they're not the only ones of the Wild West time.
No, May Lily died in a car accident. Yeah, it's being driven by Pawnee Bill, so...
And, you know, Pawnee Bill sustained injuries and
injuries
all
of that, yeah.
It's just, it's fascinating to see that, like, the way that this is viewed is that cowboys and cowgirls belong on their ranch on horseback, and they have no business with
these newfangled machines. Yeah, I can imagine some old farmer just sitting there watching the funeral being like, oh, those machines, they're taking over the world, you know?
But it's what these famous and rich people are doing nowadays. They are, you know, exploring the newest and greatest in technology because they can.
They can.
And, you know, there's not a whole lot of, like, accidents and things that are happening, but when they do, it's usually famous people, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I actually found an article, oddly enough, so a lot of the obituaries that talk about Lucille, there's not actually one certain obituary that talks about Lucille. It talks about the car accident, and then it talks about her being buried. But there was one article that talked about she was one of 8 car accidents that took place on that day.
On that day?
On that day in the state of Oklahoma.
That's a lot. Well, yeah. I mean, the first automobile accident that ever happened between the only 2 cars in a town.
Yeah, like the state of Ohio or something like that. I can't remember. Yeah. Yeah, it talked about how, of course, she's the most famous one that died in that car. But she was like one of 8 that took place on that same day in the state of Oklahoma.
So maybe at that point, yeah, they really should stick to their horses. But that's just a trend, is that famous people die, usually not doing what they've always done. You know, riding a horse
exactly.
or something like that.
So what happened to the Mulhole Ranch? And the quick answer to that is, I have no idea. Mulhole, Oklahoma is actually not that far from here. Have you seen the Mulhole exit when you go through, like, I-35 down to Oklahoma City?
I don't guess I have. Orlando. You know, I noticed Guthrie and Enid in places like that.
Yeah, it's like north of Guthrie. Okay. Yeah, it's like if you go to school there today, it's called like Mulhole Orlando because they've combined the school district.
Okay.
But the town of Mulhole is actually still there. The town of Mulhole only has a population of 225 people.
That's small.
So Mulhole is still there.
And I bet it's still a ranching community.
Very much so, yeah. The most famous thing there is Lucille's, which is a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's named after
Lucille.
The original town, or I would say about 80% of the original town, was actually wiped out by the May 3rd, 1989 tornado. Do you know about the May 3rd, 1989 tornado?
I've heard stories. Didn't it hit Pawnee? Or was this
not
a different
that
one?
One no, the May 3rd, 1989 tornado was the one that hit Moore Norman. It was the mile wide tornado.
So, for those of you who don't know, please don't hate me. I'm not actually
Casey
from Oklahoma.
Casey is from Lubbock.
I'm from Lubbock, Texas, and we've had a tornado. We've had one tornado. But whenever I was moving here, my mom's first reaction was, "You can't go. They have tornadoes all the time." And I've been here not quite a year, but it's 6 or 7 months now.
She's seen more snow than tornadoes.
I haven't seen any tornadoes. So, you know, outside of Oklahoma, all of these people are going, that's all Oklahoma has is tornadoes. And you've got a lot of big tornadoes.
You haven't even been here during tornado season yet. So
yes, I have.
You
I was here in the spring.
Yet. Nah, you haven't been here early spring yet. So.
Okay, well, we'll see. Yeah. I don't want a tornado. Let me be very clear. I don't want a tornado. But whenever I moved here, I have friends here in Oklahoma. I have a friend in Norman. I have a friend in Midwest City. And they were both like, whatever you do, don't move to Moore. And so
well, that's where this
that
tornado was
bring
started.
Bring this up is, I'm like, okay, this is...
So yeah, May 3rd, 1989 was one of the largest tornadoes like ever on record. It started in Moore Norman and it tracked all the way up through Mulhall and destroyed like 80% of the original buildings they had there.
I mean, that's a lot because Guthrie is 30, 45 minutes away.
Yeah, it was a mile wide at its biggest. And so that tornado wiped out almost all the original buildings from Lucille's time. So sadly for the city of Mulhall, like, most of the original buildings that Lucille would have known when she was alive are no longer there because of the 1989 tornado that hit there.
Now, I'm sure at this point it's still a very small community, so there's just...
Mm-hmm.
It's just easier to rebuild a new building than...
Yeah, in fact, I think Lucille's... Now, Lucille's, the restaurant, has undergone change in ownership a few times, and It was in the original bank building for Mulhall, so the original bank. But it also suffered a fire not that long ago. So I'm not sure, honestly, if it's still in the original building or if it's not. I'm sure someone can correct me on that. But it might still be in the original building. But if it is, that is the original bank building for the city of Mulhall.
So the bank did survive.
Yes.
So that's good.
Yes.
It's at least something.
You know, tornadoes. So there are still some of the original buildings there.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. The last of the surviving Mulhall children died on February 21st, 1958. So they lived about 18 years after Lucille did in Oklahoma City in Oklahoma. Then you have Charlie Mulhall, who outlived all of his siblings, but he ended up succumbing to at the age of 69. And according to his obituary, he had moved off the Mulhall Ranch in 1945 and worked in a warehouse for the Humpty Dumpty stores in Oklahoma City for about 12 years before his retirement. So there's not a Mulhall left on the ranch at this point. And then you have William Logan Van Bergen, the son of Lucille Mulhall, who died on February 21st in 1993. So he outlived everybody, which is understandable. He was probably the youngest in Los Angeles, California.
He's actually buried at the same cemetery as Nellie Ruffner.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty famous
cemetery. That's a very famous cemetery, yeah, in Los Angeles.
That's the Hollywood burial site, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah. And as far as we know, and we can be corrected on this, he did have children. Mm-hmm. So the family, it does continue today. Yep. Do we know if they still go by Mulhall or if at this point it's... No, I believe they go by
Van Bergen.
Van Bergen. Lucille's
husband's child. Name. And her husband, Martin Van Bergen, actually died in 1924. So he died well before her, and he died in Peru, according to Find a Grave.
Interesting.
I think he was on tour. If I read that correctly, he was on tour and he died. So the legacy of the original cowgirl continues today. Lucille has been inducted posthumously into many different Hall of Fames, including the Rodeo Hall of Fame at the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum in 1975. If you're old school, that is the Cowboy Hall of Fame in Oklahoma City. They've changed their name within the past, I think, 10 to 15 years. So, and the National Cowgirl Hall of Fame at Fort Worth, Texas. And her image is used widely in books about cowgirls and ranchers, so she's instantly recognizable. Like, if I showed you a picture, you'd be like, oh yeah, that's Lucille. Like, you know pictures of Lucille Mulhall.
Right.
However, despite all of her accolades of her life and beyond, perhaps the one that meant the most to Lucille was that of rancher. Like, that is what she loved most in life. So...
Yeah, she didn't become a Wild West Show performer of her own will. She became it because her father...
said, let's go do this.
Yeah, and he was seeing other people were making money. Mm-hmm. Buffalo Bill was, Pawnee Bill was, and he's got a daughter who's doing things that men can't usually or can't do. Especially in, like, Chicago... or places like that, the big cities and the areas that aren't rural. So. Yeah,
so surprisingly short life of Lucia Mulhall.
It's just, it's fascinating. Years. But so much happens in 55 years. Yeah. You know, you see the change of fashion, you see the change of beliefs, the change of what is expected of women, what's expected of rodeos. I mean, you see the Wild West Show go away and the rodeo rodeos emerge.
Come
in.
Yeah, the one thing I always crack up about too is when people come here and they always ask, well, did Pawnee Bill know so-and-so? And I'm like, oh yeah, he did. And they're like, well, how did that happen? And I'm like, I guess you forget how small this time period is.
The
you know, how Wild small West. It is and how small the West is. Like, they all knew each other. Like, they all knew each other. They all hung out together.
It's a very brief amount of time, but it's so iconic in the United States. And even over in Europe, you know, people ask about the Wild West because it's just so iconic. But it happens within a very short span of time comparatively to other movements and other events that happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, arguably, like, 1840 to 1940. I mean, and if you want to talk about rodeo history, I mean, you can go up to present day, but still, I mean, you're only talking about like 100 years of history.
And which is not a lot.
It's not a lot, no, at all. And then, I mean, you talk about, you know, Lucille's life, that's only 55 years. Or Pawnee Bill's life, that's only 81 years. I mean, so you're talking about really short expanses of time. And then within that, like, you're talking about really small spaces. I mean, Oklahoma to California, that's not a lot of space to cover.
Right.
So, I mean, well, and then Pawnee Bill, my dad the other day was like, think about all the places he went in his life. And I was like, well.
Over to Europe.
And then he went to Hawaii. And then he went to Mexico. And, well, what brought that about is we were eating at a Mexican food restaurant in Stillwater, Oklahoma. And I look up. Because we were watching the Georgia-Alabama National Championship was being replayed, and I'm watching it above the bar. And on the bar, there was a decoration, and it looks like one of our artifacts in the mansion. And I pointed at it and I was like, hey, we have that in the Buffalo Bill room.
What was it?
It was like a little, that canteen with the water cup that sits on top of it. It's like made of terracotta.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, we have that. And my dad goes, where? And I was like, in the Buffalo Bill room. And he goes, well, where do you think he got it? I was like, probably Mexico. And it was in a Mexican food restaurant. And I was like, he probably got it when he was in Mexico.
I mean, what else are you going to pick up in Mexico?
So it's just so funny because places you go today, I'm like, we have that. Like, we have that. Even though he bought it like 100 years ago, we have that.
So those things are still iconic. The rope tricks are still iconic. You know, the bullfighting, the steer roping, things that came about from a short period.
We took you to your first rodeo in August.
I did. I know. That's weird for a Texan to say that I'd never been to a rodeo, and I got to go to my first rodeo in Oklahoma.
I looked at her and I was like, have you ever seen bull riding? She was like, no. And I was like, come with me.
Oh, it was strange.
She was horrified.
Sat there and I watched two men sit at a table as a bull ran straight for them, and whoever didn't get up first got the most money. Like, I can understand how people were horrified that she killed an animal. Like, you know, but that's part of the world. I mean, I've been to fairs. That's nothing.
I think
new,
one day we'll have to cover why we don't have women's bull events anymore in rodeos, because that's
an interesting
topic. It goes back to Lucille's time. But that's a podcast for another day. But yeah, we did take Casey to her first rodeo back in August, and
it was an experience.
It was a whole new
world
for her.
So it was, but it wasn't, because that culture, that rodeo culture, I mean, the rodeo comes through Lubbock, Texas.
There's,
we have the
nothing
ABC
like
rodeo.
It. I mean, there is nothing like it in the world.
But like, a lot of Texas schools are agriculture based. Mm-hmm. Like, we have a lot of ag schools in Texas. So it's not like the culture itself wasn't unknown. Like, seeing people and understanding like their culture wasn't a hard thing. It was just that I had never sat down and watched a rodeo before. It's just something that my family didn't mm-hmm. do, which is strange to think, because back in the day, the thing to do was to go to a Wild West show or to a rodeo when it came
yeah.
to town.
Or a circus. You know, circuses
I've
are
never
kind
been
of a dying
to a
breed
circus
too
either.
Now, too, because of the whole animal cruelty thing that's
right.
happening. You know, keeping animals captive and everything. So I kind of wonder today, you know, if Pawnee Bill was still around, what he would think of all that. Because that was such a big part of his life for so long. I probably saw a circus when I was little bitty, but it's just not something that you regularly see anymore.
Oh, I've never seen it.
Yeah.
And I'm not much younger than you.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, it's just interesting to see the way that things change just over, you know, even short expanses of time.
Because 100 years, that's not...
It's not a lot
a
of time.
Lot, but so much happens. So many big names come out of this time period.
Yeah.
And it's still things that we still have a part of our culture today. Mm-hmm. The Wild West shows, or the Wild West is still romanticized. Rodeos were born from Wild West shows, and the acts that these people like Lucille and Pawnee Bill and Buffalo Bill performed, and we're still seeing them today. Now, it'll be interesting, like you're saying, to see what'll happen in the next 10, 15 years,
yeah.
if this is going to continue to be a big part, because these names are dying names. You know,
mm-hmm.
Pawnee Bill isn't very well known anymore.
No.
I actually had a guest
yeah,
on tour.
Yeah, your first time ever.
Somebody
yeah.
asked me who Buffalo Bill was, and that was shocking to me, because usually we can guarantee
yeah.
you know who Buffalo
and
Bill is.
And we have more and more kids come through who don't even know who Will Rogers is, which kind of surprises me.
Right.
Because I'm like, we live in Oklahoma, and he's arguably one of the most famous Oklahomans ever. And like I said, I can show you a picture of Lucille, and you can probably look at it and be like, oh yeah, I've seen that person before.
You may not know, like, the name, but
I
you know the face.
This person. And I would probably say like 4 out of 5 people would be like, yeah, that's Lucille. Like, I know who that is, you
right.
know, but you know, you might not know, like, I might say Lucille Mulholland and be like, I have no clue who that is.
Without seeing a picture.
Without
yeah.
seeing a picture of it. Yeah. So, yeah, so that'll end our talk on Lucille Mulhall. Next month for February, we're going to come back with a topic that we've actually discussed already, but I think it's going to be really interesting because we discovered that a book got written about it. Back in Billy Lilly's time, back during Billy Lilly's podcast, we talked about the place that he was born, the Willows Maternity Sanitarium in Kansas City, Missouri. And this place, I've described it to Casey.
It's interesting.
It's interesting.
I'm excited to learn about it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the history of teenage pregnancy back in the 1900s and 1920s. We're going to talk about what made this particular place special. We're going to talk about how it played into the history of Pawnee Bill. And again, we've already talked about it with the Billy Lilly podcast, but this book goes deeper in depth as to kind of how Pawnee Bill and May would have chosen this place out of all others to go and adopt Billy from. And then we're going to kind of talk about the history of adoptions through the 1920s, because it has a really interesting and a little bit of a dark history behind it. Because adoption in the 1920s, it's a little taboo. So we're right. going to talk about that in the February podcast of the Pawnee Bill Ranch podcast. So yeah, we hope that you enjoyed Lucille Mulhall. And we will see you next time.
Thank you.